All right, so listening to some of your tracks, you have a very eclectic sound. I mean, some songs you sound a little like Carole King, a couple other ones you sound a little like Fiona Apple. Where do you get your sound from?
Oh, boy.
Aside from your, you know, your voice, you know, aside from your mouth.
Well, first of all, thanks for the compliment. I think Carole King and Fiona Apple are both super cool.
Well, then we started off on the right foot.
Thank you. I'll tell you what, I grew up, I mean, my folks had this huge record collection. Mm-hmm. The very first album I ever remember listening to was Stevie Wonder, Inner Visions.
Nice.
And so, you know, I was sort of washed in everything from Stevie Wonder to the Beatles from, like, literally my very, very first memories. Mm-hmm. We had Carole King, we had a copy of Tapestry.
Nice.
And I guess it all just sort of fused together. Eclectic is right. I often have a hard time describing the genre because I like so many different things. Last night I was dancing around to Tribe Called Quest.
Very good.
And then this morning I was listening to Sade. So... So I guess the convoluted long answer is that the eclectic sound comes from listening to a lot of different stuff. And then in my range, you know, Carole King is probably an obvious choice because, she's very lyrically driven. And for me, yeah, I started out as a writer. Both my parents are authors, they've both written books. My sister's a writer. So the lyrics are super important to me. And then the Fiona Apple thing, I think, sounds right. She's got a lot of smoke in her voice. She's got a lot of age in her voice.
Some rasp, just a little bit.
Yeah, just rasp. And I'm not a smoker or anything, but for some reason, some of that has always sort of been there.
Yeah.
I remember being 6 years old and banging on an oatmeal can for a drum and singing, and one of my mom's friends said she thought I sounded like Bob Dylan. And I ran into my room and I cried because I thought he sounded so awful. So, I mean, I guess, you know, when I was six, I sounded a little weird and kind of raspy, so it's there.
Okay, just to kind of go in more into, like, this little multifaceted approach you have to your sound, is that the reason why there's usually some horns featured in your songs? I mean, a couple of the songs that I listened to, it was featured prominently. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was a trumpet. Yeah. Can you just describe that a little?
Yeah, there are horns on four songs of the album. You know what? It's so funny. When I've actually never had horns in my music before, but it's something that I love.
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing. You know, when you talk about multifaceted, it sort of runs the gamut from, you know, horns will do everything from sound like a cello to sound like a car horn in your ear with the corresponding emotions. And so when I set out to be one of the producers on this album, which was a new thing for me too, the first thing I said was, I have to have horns. I don't even know what the songs are going to be yet, but I want to have horns.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, because, you know, also horns are just cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wasn't complaining.
old stuff and it was just one of those things where it was like, this is going to be mandatory. There must be horn, no matter what. And the rest sort of went around it.
Okay, we talked a little bit about, you talked a little bit about your parents' record collection. I was told also that you have a very interesting story. You spent a lot of your life on boats. Can you just describe that a little bit, how that kind of played a part in you picking music as a career?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing is that, I mean, the very first thing it taught me was that you don't have to live inside the box, you know?
Yeah.
When my parents were doing that, you know, their parents were telling them that they were crazy. What are they doing going off on a boat with two small children? And my sister was 7 and I was 4 when we left. And sailed around the world for 7 years.
Wow.
And, but the most wonderful thing about that was that it, you know, they set the example for really following your dream, what you wanted to do. And then plus, the thing is, you know, when you're out in the middle of the ocean, we didn't have TV, we didn't have Game Boys or anything like that. And so you could read or you could listen to music. And we did a lot of both. And it just, you know, music just became a totally integral part of everyday life. You know, there was always some point in the day when we would play a record, when we would play a CD, and just kind of hang out, watching the waves and listening to the rhythms, and, you know, being on the water, waves are so rhythmic too, that it just, I mean, it literally, at the risk of sounding kind of, you know, fruitcakey, it's, you know, it's sort of rhythm in general just ended up imprinting itself on me. Anyway, so waves of sound, waves of water, it definitely pointed me that way.
Okay. I mean, I was thinking about this a little bit over the past couple of days after, you know, Matt mentioned this to me. You know, you spend all this time on the ocean, very romantic, and a lot of your songs have to do with love and relationships and things like that. Is that a coincidence, or are you a big mush? Like, what's the, how did that all work out?
Well, I'm a mush, yeah, I have to say. I don't mush, but I'm also tough. I'm not a crybaby.
Uh-huh.
However, I will admit that I saw a commercial the other day. I think it's like the Chase credit card commercial or something. It's a rental car commercial.
Uh-huh.
Here, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, but it's a first rental car commercial, and it's a guy, and he and his girlfriend are flying to, like, Scottsdale to take a hot air balloon ride.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, voiceover, like, you know, the trick was going to be seen if she would come back as my fiancé. And he feels ringing it. Well, the music that's playing in that commercial is a song by Colin Hay, the guy from Men at Work.
Yeah.
It's just, he's just done some beautiful stuff. I'm just discovering his recent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a song called I'm Waiting for My Real Life to Begin.
Uh-huh.
So beautiful, and I totally started.
Yeah, you're a big push. That's okay, though.
Yeah, well, and my apologies, but...
No, it's great.
But romance, love. I also grew up in a family that says I love you. And so that has become something that's really important for me to get across. You know, there's the whole John Lennon thing where he struggled incredibly, and then I'm going off on another tangent here. But then he settled on these resolute themes of love. And it was such a shift from the tone of what was going on in the world at the time, politically and economically, and I think some people would think that it was inappropriate, you know, or naive.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always looked at it like it was such a necessary balance to kind of, you know, a lot of people write protest songs and I guess my protest is for love.
Okay. Very well said. You mentioned a little while ago about Lennon's struggle. What about your struggle? How hard has it been for you to kind of, like, break through?
Well, I'm still working on the breakthrough. I haven't struggled with drugs or anything like that. I guess I'm a little boring that way. I've struggled with not eating too many sweets. It's, you know, I cut my teeth in Austin, Texas. I went to Austin because I went there. I'd been hitchhiking in New Zealand and had met girls who were also hitchhiking in New Zealand, which is a rare thing for girls to be hitchhiking in. And we all sort of ended up banding together. And they were from Austin, Texas, and I'd never been. And I ended up going to visit them when I got back from New Zealand and fell in love with the town, fell in love with the music scene and everything, and decided that, you know, if I was really going to try to do this, that was going to be the place to go. And in the first couple of years, everything, you know, it was, everything was brand new, because I'd never done it. You know, I was fresh out of college and I hadn't done any of it. So it was all new, and everything was a totally new learning experience, and it was fantastic, and I found bands and started touring very quickly, and it was wonderful. And then, you know, it's like with anything, you have a really steep learning curve and then things plateau for a while. So I guess, you know, there were probably a couple of years in there where I struggled against myself a little bit. I think everybody or a lot of people get to a place when they progress really quickly and then things level off while you're kind of finishing the mold, that you kind of wonder, okay, well, what's the next thing? You know, when am I gonna be huge? And it wasn't until I started to accept that. It wasn't until I started to accept the fact that it's a never-ending process, that you're always honing, that you're always learning, that there is no, you know, this is the very tippity top, there's nothing more to do, I'm perfect. It wasn't until I really got comfortable with that, that I started to just sort of sit back and relax and not even look at it as a struggle. It's just, this is what I do. And I really love what I do, and I feel so fortunate to be able to make a living at it. You know, I'm making a living at it, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I wouldn't mind selling a few 100,000 more copies of my album. I think that'd be really fun. But I guess the struggle has been to just actually recognize that this is what I do. And for whatever it may bring, it's the thing I love to do.
We discussed, you just discussed that you'd like your album to sell a couple hundred thousand more copies. Let's give us a pitch for people that haven't heard your album yet. Tell us why are you so proud of your album? What went into it?
Oh boy, well, what went into it? Literally blood. Cut myself a few times.
Uh-huh.
On purpose. I wrote these songs from a really great place. You know, the first album that I did with my mentor, Jack Plotkin, who's this amazing producer, was really wonderful. It came after spending 5 years in Texas, and I was sort of, and I had spent a couple of tough relationships that had ended, you know, not so great, and so a lot of that was getting all that stuff out. And then I got into a place where I just felt so light and so thankful, and, you know, these horn lines started dancing around my head.
Have horns, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the lyrics sort of followed that, and so it's just, you know, at the risk of making it sound a little too lighthearted, it's just sweet. It makes me smile. I'm really proud of it. There are some amazing musicians who played on it. And it's kind of a nice journey. It sort of runs the gamut. There's some contemplation in it. There's some celebration. There's a little bit of crying, but not much. And it feels like the most complete thing I've ever done, which is saying something, because I'm really self-critical. and plus I recorded all the piano on the album on the actual piano that Fiona Apple recorded Tidal on.
Wow.
So it's like Fiona Apple, that's the piano.
Yeah. Well, I feel really smart now that I made that Fiona Apple reference earlier.
I know. I feel like you're smart. I know. And also, huge compliment, because basically I can just plunk out chords.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly a pianist.
Oh, okay. Is there one song in particular, aside from possibly the title track that you are incredibly proud of, and if so, why?
Oh, yeah. I tell you what. The title track is the one I'm most proud of. There are... Oh, boy. that's a tough question. There are two songs that are jumping to mind. One is, it's just a totally plain piano ballad. It's called Anywhere. And the song starts with the line, I'm calling you to tell you that I'll go to New York with you. It's one of those songs that came out in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Completely formed.
Very nice.
And I feel like it's very concise. Not filled with bridges or anything. But I feel like it's sort of a perfect song for saying that thing. For saying, I love you and I'll do anything for you. For saying, I promise. And I was really proud of it and really proud of the melody and really proud of how it sort of came out full form. I was proud of that as like its own baby. Like I almost didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Just sort of looked at it and went, that's really neat. Thanks for coming into existence.
Yeah, that's great.
The other song that would be my favorite other than Where I Belong is the song called Everywhere You Go, and that's the song that has all the la-la-las on it. And that one I'm just really proud of because Van Morrison is one of my all-time favorites, and he sings la-las better than anyone I know.
Yeah, he's the la-la king, absolutely.
Yes, Mr. La-la king. And I never had my own la-la song, and it was just sort of a challenge to me, you know, because I really wanted to have a la-la song. And so I'm really proud of that for that, and also because I got my niece and nephew and their friends to sing on it.
Oh, very nice.
And so you can sort of hear them in the background choruses of all those la-las there, a bunch of kids. And that just makes me really proud every time I listen to it, you know. And you've got family involved, and that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Sweet. Is there anything else that you want to say about the album or anything that we haven't touched base on?
Well, God, no, I don't think so. The album, yeah, just everybody go get it, love it. that's not the most modest ending tag there, sort of shameless self-promotion. I don't know. You've had me do like a 20-minute monologue, and I feel like I've talked your ear off.
No, it was great.